This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Farrah.com. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So Seattle City Council wants to destroy and then rebuild companies like Uber and Lyft into companies that better reflect the personal political beliefs of each and every council member. People have no idea how to actually run a business, who've never actually run any businesses. But they've got this belief that they're all knowing, we're all helpless without them to watch our backs, tell us how to live, tell us how to run a company. They see the money behind companies like Uber, and then you've got an extra push coming from the labor unions out there who want to take as much money as humanly possible from these companies and put it into the coffers of the unions. Right now, the council is devising a bunch of plans to regulate what they call the gig economy. That's when we've got independent contractors who are working for some of these sites. They're not full-time employees. We're talking about the folks who drive for Uber or Lyft or deliver food for DoorDash or Instacart or Postmates and all those kinds of services. They're not members of any union. So since the unions haven't been able to figure out how to bilk the employees' paychecks for union dues, they're going to try to make it hard for these businesses to operate. That'll give them maybe a little bit of an extra inch that they need to take to protect their current union workers who are in direct competition with some of these perspectives, some of these specific jobs. And so Teresa Mosqueda, council member for Seattle City Council, she had a forum this week. And of course, she would cherry pick workers who the union pretty much likes, the talking point that's going to specifically push a narrative that the union likes. Here's one, Mariah Mitchell.
I'm basically working from 4:30 in the morning till 10 at night, trying to survive and feed my family. Basically, I'm not making ends meet with the rent costs, rising rents, electricity, the expenses I have. I think that people would be willing to pay more.
Oh, okay. You think we're going to be willing to pay more so that you can have a somewhat easier day? And maybe we will be. I would argue we're already paying a lot more. Take an Uber Eats circumstance. Anytime you order from them, you're getting hit with a tax and a service fee. Plus, on top of that, the fact that you're getting minimum wage, but you're also getting the tip on top. Don't tell me that it's cheap already. You complain about the cost of living in Seattle while simultaneously say, hey, we should make it even more expensive to operate here, so it's a little bit easier on me. Now, I'm willing to bet that I can go into that individual's background and look at certain decisions she's currently making that maybe isn't in her best interest if she's that hard up for money, if she's legitimately working from 6:30 a.m. in the morning to the middle of the night, just barely scraping by. But let's be clear, this has nothing to do with her, and this is not a usual view. Her position is not a perspective that's shared by even a great majority of the folks who work for Uber Eats or Lyft or Caviar or Postmates. And let's also be clear and say that this is not just a push for union greed, even though that's really what's at stake here. It's not just about that. It's also about the self-righteous politicians who think they're the reason why these companies are thriving to begin with. And by the way, they ought to have more of a say in how these companies spend their money because they're truly responsible for the success of Uber. This was a perspective that I think was actually best articulated by President Obama. Listen to this.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help.
Okay.
There was a great teacher somewhere in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
You didn't build that. You're not responsible for Uber. You're not responsible for the innovative business you just came up with that disrupted an entire industry. You didn't raise all the capital going into meeting after meeting after meeting pitching the idea of Uber. We built that. I mean, after all, could Uber exist without a road? I suppose that's true. Where did you get that road? Did you just make it out of... No, you taxed us. I've paid for that road. I've already paid for the road. You don't get any special compensation or a pat on the back because you built that road. That is your job. But this is a belief that you're not responsible for your own success. And it makes sense, I suppose, in a general sense, coming from a Democratic perspective, because you're never to blame for anything that happens to you. That woman, for example, who's complaining about barely scraping by, she's not to blame at all for the position that she finds herself in. She's a victim of something. Now what? I don't know. We're going to have to just go ahead and just pick from a hat a whole bunch of different things that we can blame this on. She holds no responsibility whatsoever. And the people who build their businesses, the ones who literally start from nothing and build it into something incredibly important and incredibly huge and impactful and innovative and disruptive, yeah, you didn't really do that. That's a dangerous perspective to have, and it's being used to destroy some really innovative companies here. And remember, bad policies of Seattle, they spread, so you should be paying attention to what's going on and helping to fight back if you live in Shoreline or Clinton or Sammamish or Tacoma, because these ideas end up in your neck of the woods. That's why we've got an election that's coming up that's so incredibly important for you to get involved in. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So the Washington State Legislature and the governor, they both approved a new law that allows medical marijuana products in schools. We're talking about high schools, for example. We're about a month into it, and it works like this, according to Cairo 7. You've got a parent of a student that is medically prescribed marijuana. So this means they're under the age, for example, of 18. And they're in school, and they need access to it. You can request to be able to give the child weed-infused products for the purposes of medical necessity, meaning we're not just giving some kid a joint. Say, hey, you go into the bathroom, go smoke a doobie over there. That's not what we're talking about. You go up to the individual school administrator, whoever it happens to be, probably the nurse's office, say, hey, I need to be able to consume this marijuana for whatever it is that it's being prescribed to them for, right? And then at that point, according to the law, it's up to the school district to come up with basically some sort of policy to accommodate the student. Now, beyond that, of course, the school does have to do some, you know, basic checkpoints to make sure that this is actually legitimate and it's not some kid who's just like, oh, my doctor told me I gotta eat this weed brownie. But don't call anybody. Don't call it because that, don't check on it. But just trust me. Like, that's not what we're talking about. You actually have to do some check to make sure that it's all on the up and up. In fact, right now in the Mukilteo School District, they're considering a new policy to figure out how exactly they're going to go about instituting this. Bruce Hobert is with the school district, and he told Cairo 7 TV this.
Times are different, and we've got people with medical needs, and this is pretty unique policy in that the district doesn't store or handle the medication. We don't administer it.
So in cases like this, there's usually a lot of people who say the end is near. Oh my God, the sky is falling. These are the same folks who said the world is going to end once we legalize marijuana in the state of Washington recreationally. That's not going to happen. Let's everybody chill. This isn't about chill. I'm pardon the pun, I suppose. It's not about, again, giving some random seven-year-old a joint. This is about specifically targeting students who are medically in need, according to their doctors, according to experts, which are smarter than you and me, saying the kid needs access to this. And my guess is, even though we don't have any numbers yet as to how many students this is actually going to apply to, my guess is it's rather low, and it's going to be okay. We have to start normalizing the use of marijuana when it is legal and when it is used for medicinal purposes. I do not believe that you guys who are against this, and I respect you and I understand your perspective on this, and I understand some of the consequences societally for this sort of stuff, but I still think you're overreacting and you've lost this battle. This is not a battle you're going to be able to win. Nationwide, marijuana is going to be legalized all across the country. Within your lifetime, within my lifetime. It is already starting to happen and the momentum is there, and it's there because it makes sense. And the data does not support the naysayers. Not to say that there are no problems. There are some problems, and we can address them. In fact, I would prefer that you address them. I would prefer, rather than continue to stand against it, because you've already lost that battle, why not step up and maybe work a little bit harder to mitigate some of the problems that you think are going to happen in a society that allows for the legalization of recreational marijuana, or in this case, on a campus, kids who are taking it for medicinal purposes. Why not step up and say, you know what, I'm really passionate about this, I'm concerned, but this is the reality, this is where we live, and I'm going to do my best to make sure that at least in this world, it's being done in a safe and responsible way. That, I think, is time well spent. Certainly better spent than constantly telling us how, oh my God, you're all sinners, you're all going to hell for this, oh, I don't know if we're going to survive. We will all survive. I promise you that. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Would love to hear your perspective on this story, because I know that a lot of people out there strongly disagree with me. That's okay. Tell me why. 1-800-465-8770. Let's get you home the right way with the right way traffic.
Seattle to SeaTac, still going to be about a 30-minute drive, but an earlier stalled vehicle heading up the South Center Hill, southbound I-5 at 216th is now clear to the roadway. Traffic that's backed up from a Boeing freeway should be cleared or starting to thin out. North 405 still jammed from mid-Bellevue on up to 116th in Kirkland, where a crash is off to the right shoulder. Today could be the last day you pay full price for gas. Get easy pay at Circle K and save 30 cents a gallon on your first 100 gallons. Sign up in-store and visit CircleK.com/EasyPay for more details. You're listening to AM 770 KTTH.
Don't forget, we are available on podcasts in case you missed any of this show or if you missed the Saul Spady show earlier this morning. All you have to do is text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770 or head on over to wherever it is you listen to and download podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Radio.com, wherever it is. Or just simply text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
It was a pretty despicable hit piece in Bloomberg News that cost a really good man his job working at the Department of Labor. The journalist, and I suppose I put that in air quotes in this case, his name is Ben Penn. He called out an anti-Semitic post by Leif Olson. The attention then forced Olson. And by the way, it wasn't anti-Semitic at all. He was actually calling out anti-Semitism, which makes the story even more maddening. Josh Hammer is a columnist for the Daily Wire. He's also a personal friend of Olson, and Josh joins me now. Josh, thank you so much for coming on.
Always great to be with you, Jason.
So what happened exactly? Take us through the posts and how it led to his resignation.
Yeah, so really, really lamentable story here. You know, I have to say, Jason, as a personal friend of Leif for years now, just seeing his name in New York Times columns and being kind of the focal point of the daily Twitter cycle, it's really surreal. He's kind of like a low-key, easygoing, very not particularly self-assuming guy. I mean, very humble. This whole thing is just wild to me. I'm still processing it.
Sure.
But what happened was, you have to go back to August 2016. If you recall, there was an anti-Semite, an alt-right populist icon, a guy named Paul Nehlen, who was trying to primary Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, in Wisconsin's 1st Congressional District. Nehlen was promoted by Breitbart, Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, various other kind of populist figures, and he ended up getting demolished. He lost by roughly 70 points, about an 85-15 margin. And Leif went on Facebook, and he very grimly, sardonically, sarcastically mocked Breitbart and Coulter and the other people who were backing Nehlen. And he was making fun of the fact that Nehlen was promoted by the alt-right, that he was already dabbling in anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. He was actually ultimately banned from Twitter in 2018 for being an overt anti-Semite. So the post in question, we can go over the exact language if you want, is clearly sarcastic. All you need is one functioning brain cell to be able to discern this. It's not particularly difficult. But what happened here is a reporter, if we can use that term, at Bloomberg Law, Ben Penn, went back and apparently thought it was his mission to go back and search Leif Olson's private Facebook posts from 3 years ago and dug up a post that he submitted to Department of Labor and presented as anti-Semitism, even though Leif was making fun of anti-Semites.
And by the way, again, you understate how clearly sarcastic this was. There's literally no functioning human being who's arguing in good faith can look at what he posted and argue anything but a very, very clear, sarcastic joke.
Totally. And he actually, Ben Penn in his Bloomberg Law column, actually ended up omitting relevant information. Because if you go down to the comments below the post, someone ends up responding to Leif's post and says, "Not Breitbart's best day." And then Leif responds, not Breitbart.com's best series of months, I think you mean. Like a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
And he literally refers to Paul Ryan's having, quote, suffered a massive, historic, emasculating 70-point victory. This is like sarcasm 101. So this reporter ends up submitting this to the Department of Labor. Neefa had just uprooted his entire family from Houston, Texas to Washington, D.C. to serve as a political appointee in the Department of Labor. And he ends up having to resign over this. And it's just an absolute outrage. And for proud Jews and Zionists like yourself and me, Jason, it's even worse. Because the effort to root out and extirpate and get rid of noxious, toxic, anti-Semitic rhetoric and actions, which are on the rise in the United States, that effort is hindered and undermined when people tendentiously cry wolf and try to take political scalps in the false, fraudulent name of anti-Semitism.
And the thing I wouldn't even be normally upset. If Leaf was posting virulently anti-Semitic stuff, that's totally fair game, and we should be exposing it. But if we're going to, quote-unquote, expose anti-Semitism, you have to actually make sure it's legitimately anti-Semitism, because a lot of folks will say, well, why didn't Leaf fight this? Well, because fighting this instead of resigning makes this about him, and because he's such a good guy, he doesn't want this to be about him. He wants this to be about the work that the Trump administration is trying to do and the work that he was trying to do.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Leaf himself has not been doing any media hits. I mean, he's not the kind of guy who tries to take the spotlight. It's just not in his nature. He does have a very dry sense of humor. I can personally attest to that, having known him for years. But, you know, look, the Department of Labor obviously made a bad decision here in accepting this resignation. And they really, really should have pushed back and defended their political appointee. But I understand from, you know, sources close to what's going on here that the Department of Labor and the White House are actively involved right now in discussions to remedy the situation. So I understand they're talking about making a right out of this wrong. So the real person that we should have in our crosshairs here is Ben Penn and his editors at Bloomberg, because this is just a tragic misuse of journalism. And if this is journalism in the 21st century, Jason, I want nothing to do with it personally.
Yeah, it was a trash story. It was clearly a hit piece. Ben Penn on Twitter is going out of his way to pretend that he's the victim because of all the pushback. He's not the victim. He is the perpetrator of a serious wrong, and it needs to be fixed. And I'm glad that your sources are telling you that, at least behind the scenes right now, there's at least an attempt to fix this very, very clear wrong. The story is up right now at dailywire.com. Go check it out. Josh Hammer, a wonderful friend of the show, really dives into this in more detail, and anyone who reads this can very clearly see that everything that was quoted is done so in bad faith by Ben Penn. I believe it was intentional misrepresentation. Do you think this was just sloppy reporting?
No, I have every reason to believe that this was intentional.
Yeah.
In fact, if you go over Ben Penn's tweets yesterday, he managed to pick up that Leaf was involved in some socially conservative litigation down in Houston with regard to same-sex marriage. It seems to me that Ben Penn is a leftist who is legitimately trying to take the scalp of a conservative Trump political appointee. I think it's that simple. Really is.
And that's where we are in 2019. That's how a lot of folks are deciding to win battles, by purposefully misrepresenting positions. And by the way, doing so while the party ends up supporting actual anti-Semites like Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. It's absolutely maddening. Check out the story right now. It's over at dailywire.com. We've been talking with our columnist, Josh Hammer. Josh, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
You got it, Jason. Anytime.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Again, check it out at dailywire.com. If you want to join the conversation, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. That's an Unbetter tax resolution hotline.
From the Online Trading Academy studio, this is AM 770 KTTH.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. That's brought to you by Sean Keller, Smiles by Design. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They spend a lot of their energy talking about Seattle, and they end up ignoring a lot of the other communities out there that you live in, that you care about most. And so during the Big Local, we do the opposite of what they normally do in the media. We talk about your communities. And we completely ignore the city of Seattle. And we start in Tukwila, where classes start today, but they're already under threat of a teacher strike, which is making parents like this one really, really anxious about what she's going to do with her kid.
It's unfortunate because last year she had to come to work with me for a few days, so it kind of puts a bit of stress on us when we're getting ready to send them back, and then turns out that they're not going back.
That's a woman named Letty talking with Cairo 7 TV. The Tukwila Education Association, the TEA, they say teachers are being paid a lot less than others in surrounding districts. Union members have voted to authorize a strike if no deal is reached by Friday. And so that's going to put a lot of parents in really difficult positions trying to figure out what exactly they're going to do with their kid. And of course, it all comes down to pay. Now, they'll sugarcoat it a little bit. Teachers and TEA members like Andrea Gamboa, talking with our sister station, Cairo Radio.
We want our school district to be great. And we know that in order to do that, we have to take care of our special education students. And they have to pay our members a competitive salary so that the best stay.
So I like they throw in the special education scenario, because then it elicits even more sympathy, understandably so. Now, the school district says that it appreciates the teachers. They think they're bargaining in good faith, and they're hopeful that none of the classes are going to be interrupted this week. But they will, of course, the teachers, happily use your kids as hostages. They will use these kids as leverage because they know teachers are always supported no matter what, right?
They spend a lot of time with their kids, and it's for their education, so I'm all for it.
Well, as long as the teachers ask for it, we're supposed to immediately give it to them. Now, a statement sent to us implies that funding is a challenge. The school district is saying Tukwila is on the negative end of state and local revenue. So they're in a position that a lot of other districts found themselves in. And of course, they ended up giving in to the teachers in those other circumstances, whether we're talking about Edmonds or Tacoma, Puyallup, Spokane. And what ended up happening? They approved the budgets. They say, okay, you've got us over a barrel here. There's nothing we can do. You're going to strike. We can't have that. We'll give in. And then later on in the year, they end up announcing layoffs. They end up announcing they're not going to fill vacant positions, all to save money. I'm assuming the same exact thing is going to happen here, except let's be very clear about something. The cost of living in Tukwila is much, 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 much cheaper than that of the district in the city we don't talk about during this segment, which is the surrounding school district in which they're comparing themselves to. You have a house in Tukwila costing on average about $320,000. In Seattle, it's about $720,000. There's a big difference in the cost of living between the two. But again, it's teachers, and so you've got people like this grandmother talking to Q13 saying, and I love this audio more than anything ever, saying, y'all just give them whatever it is they want.
Well, I pray that that it's no strike. I mean, last year it was horrible. Kids had to wait, and then they had to make it up. Oh, my gee whiz. See, give them, the teachers, what they want. They are there to give education to the children.
Oh, okay.
And these kids shouldn't have to wait because they strike it.
The teachers know that they've got public opinion on their side, so they're going to continue to ask for more and more and more every single year, and we're going to find ourselves in the exact same position. A year ago, I did this exact same story. 2 years ago, you know what I did? This exact same story. Producer Peyton, you know what we're going to do a year from today?
This story?
This exact story? This same story! Because they know they will win, and they will always win, because no district will ever say no. Because God forbid you say no to teachers, they're all heroes, of course. Meanwhile, in Burien, a man was arrested after deputies say he carjacked a tow truck and then led cops on a pursuit. It happened yesterday afternoon around 5:30 in the afternoon, according to Cairo 7 TV. Officers responding to calls about a dude throwing rocks at different businesses and cars. And apparently the damage done by the rocks was pretty substantial.
Started picking up rocks, throwing rocks, and damaging, from what I was told, 15 cars. Every car that was here was damaged.
He was not talking straight, and you could hear him yelling.
I'm sure totally sober, though. 100% sober, stone cold sober.
Without a doubt.
Guarantee. I'd put money on that if I were a betting man.
Well, you have to know because of the accuracy from the rocks.
Exactly. Although at some point, if you're throwing rocks at businesses, it kind of feels like it's hard not to hit them. But okay, fair enough. Deputies end up showing up after getting 911 calls, and they see the dude running to a tow truck outside the nearby Wizards Casino. And as the driver was trying to secure a car to the tow truck, the dude assaults the driver of the tow truck, jumps in the tow truck, and then goes on a high-speed chase. But first, officers were trying to block him in. They were trying to keep him in that parking lot. Unfortunately, the guy ends up ramming the tow truck into the patrol car of a detective. The car attached to the tow truck then came off and rolled into some bushes. So it was a total mess that ended as a high-speed chase.
He kept coming as fast as he could go and hit the back of that car right there. And it pushed it out of the way and went around it and kept going.
Who knows how long this would have went on or how many other people could have gotten injured or killed.
Okay. I mean, no one was killed. Someone was injured. Person's going to be okay. Eventually, this dude ends up crashing and then gets arrested. He now faces a whole bunch of different felony charges, though. Here's an expectation I have. This is Jason Tells the Future producer, Peyton, so write this down. On September 4th at 4:37 p.m., let it be known, this guy who is responsible will be arrested under similar charges in probably about 6 weeks from now. Now, Jason, how might you know that? You can't tell the future. Oh, yes, I can. Because there's one key line in this Cairo 7 TV news report that says it all. Quote, deputies said the suspect is known to law enforcement and had been involved in several disturbances around Burien earlier in the day. This is a repeat offender. We have so many prolific offenders in this region because we have quote-unquote leaders who don't actually want to punish these bad guys. And so what does the bad guy do? Realizes, oh, I'm not going to be punished. I'm going to continue that behavior. In cases of people who are dealing with a mental illness or an addiction of some kind, and maybe that is partly to blame for what happened yesterday in Burien, guess what? They're not being treated. What ends up happening to people who are not being treated? Oh, they don't get better. They continue down the path of this kind of destructive behavior, and there are more and more and more victims every single day. King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg, not going to do a damn thing about this. He will do absolutely nothing. They will refuse to prosecute. They will refuse to throw this guy in jail. Let's get him the mental health care treatment he needs, if that's the case here. But then they won't actually follow up and make sure that he gets the mental health care treatment that he needs. And then he's back on the streets, whether it's Burien or Kent. Maybe he's going to go hang out in Bellingham for a bit. These problems spread because we allow them. And then finally, if you're wondering if that cougar is still lurking around Mercer Island, the answer is...
$1 million question. Don't know.
And before you, don't you turn on that microphone, before you give me a hard time, I know this time what the story is about. I know we do the roundabout thing all the time. I know for a fact, because I actually looked at the story and I saw a photo on the page. I do now know it's about an older woman who is preying on young frat guys.
Lots of folks are reporting sightings, but they're not verified. I saw movement in the bushes. Saw a tail.
I thought you said you saw a picture.
Yeah, there was a woman who looked like she was in her mid-50s with blonde hair on that story.
Was there a microphone in front of her? Was she giving a quote?
Oh. Okay, that's... Yeah.
I don't think a news source would call a woman cougar while getting a quote from her.
Okay, you don't have to rub it in. I made another mistake. It was one of the women who spoke at a recent council meeting at Mercer. Okay. Again, this is something that we could approach and address in the pre-show meeting, in our prep meeting. I mean, you did not give me anything. You were like, oh, Jason, here, I'm printing out the news story for you. You did not think to tell me that the woman that's very prominently featured on this story was not the cougar that they were talking about. You know I do this all the time. All I'm asking, I know, Producer Peyton, you're brand new. Maybe Tom didn't help you out on this. I could use a little bit of help. You're there to help me.
You know, when I make a mistake, you yell at me for a half hour, and then you just expect that I understood and that I'm going to get it right next time. You make this cougar mistake last week, I'm going to expect that you're going to get it right this time, and I didn't yell at you for 30 minutes like you usually do to me, but I figured that you had it.
Well, you figured wrong. And now, because of that mistake, I'm going to yell at you for 30 minutes. Because you trusted me a little bit too much.
Saw that one coming.
God. it's not as interesting of a story now. They're all like, we don't know if there's a cougar out there. People keep saying they're seeing sightings, but we haven't been able to actually confirm whether or not they're there. But at least according to the Fish and Wildlife agent who was at this council meeting with the person who I thought was actually a cougar, it turns out that she was just someone who's in the community concerned. They're all like, don't worry, relax.
Sightings in and of themselves do not equate to a public safety risk. There have been 21 confirmed attacks on humans by cougars in Washington State since 1890.
Well, maybe that's because the people who were eaten by the cougar, you didn't find the remains. I'm willing to bet that that number is higher than 21.
You sound like an expert.
Well, first of all, I read the story, so that makes me an expert. I'm on the radio. You think they just give any random dude a show?
I gotta stop questioning you.
Yeah, just get in line, man. Write that down. Never question authority. Thank you. 1-800-465-8770. If you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho. We are live on this Wednesday afternoon in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. Some folks are wondering whether or not Joe Biden is finding himself questioning the legitimacy of what the polls seem to say about his campaign. Every single poll, for the most part, one exception, one anomaly in the Monmouth poll, every other poll says he is very clearly in the lead. Whether we're talking about nationally or on a state-by-state basis, he always comes up on top. Now, who's number two and number three changes a little bit. Elizabeth Warren is clearly picking up some momentum. Bernie Sanders, pretty much where he's been the entire time. But some folks are paying attention to something that's coming from the campaign, a narrative that would suggest that maybe they don't need to win in these early primary states. Here's Fox News host Brett Baer.
If you're the front runner, you're expected to win every place. Mm-hmm. So when you start saying in September that it's not necessary for you to win Iowa and you don't have to win it, that's not exactly the best message out there. I think that spells a little bit of trouble. Obviously, Biden plays well in a place like South Carolina and the African-American voters there, and he positions well right there. But if he loses and loses big in Iowa and New Hampshire, it's tough to see how he bounces back in South Carolina.
He is 100% right, and we've talked about this for a while, which is why we've said so many times, especially those national polls don't really mean anything right now. A poll in Washington or California or Texas means nothing right now. The only poll that matters is in Iowa and New Hampshire. The top three vote getters, depending on the percentages of the votes that they're able to get, they will dictate the media narrative. Joe Biden is number one right now, according to the polls. And if you actually listen to any of the analysts who aren't directly associated with the campaign, whether we're talking about Fox, CNN, MSNBC, whether we go into the newspapers with the New York Times, everyone knows that Joe Biden is the front runner. This is his to lose. If he loses in Iowa, it doesn't matter what happens next. It's going to shift the focus. What went wrong with the Biden campaign? Oh, I guess he wasn't as strong as people thought. Oh, hey, look at who really won. Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, Pete Buttigieg. All of a sudden, the momentum starts to shift. You lose in Iowa, then you lose in New Hampshire as the front runner. You're no longer the front runner. The front runner is the person who wins in Iowa and New Hampshire, if it's one person, and the momentum starts to build and the focus on the media starts to change based on those top three candidates. Again, depending on how close it is. If you've got two big vote getters and number three comes in with just 8%, you're going to forget that. Then it's about the top two candidates. As close as you can get to the number one will dictate how much media coverage you're going to get. It does not matter that your national polls seem well. And if all of a sudden, like Brett Baer just said, in September, they're starting to downplay the importance of the results in Iowa, that seems to suggest to me they're seeing some internal polling that either shows they don't have the support in Iowa or New Hampshire that they once did or thought they had, and or number two, someone else is surging in a very alarming way to their campaign. Maybe they're looking at Elizabeth Warren. Part of the narrative has come that she's doing well in surging in some polls. Bernie Sanders, the exact same thing. In some polls, he's seen some surging, but for the most part, he's actually pretty stagnant, but he's still in that number two spot. If internally, because they're doing these polls, these campaigns on the ground as often as humanly possible, if all of a sudden they're looking at bad data, well, for them, they want to downplay what's going on in Iowa, and I understand that. They think it's going to help them. If you say, oh, don't, we're not going to win in Iowa, that's not what this is about. We're going to win in South Carolina. Then we're going to win in Florida and California. And, oh, just wait. Like, that's how they're setting up stuff. So I totally agree. Brett Baer is right in reading some of sort of the tea leaves here. And now at the same time, we still have that narrative of Biden being a gaffe machine. Mark Lauder, who is the GOP national press secretary, has been on this show a number of times. He was on Fox News saying, you know what, I don't know if these are simply gaffes, and we can call them that all you want, but that's a problem.
Well, unfortunately, I know a lot of people say these are gaffes, but it's clearly a problem with Joe Biden. I mean, he gets about every detail wrong in a couple of minutes about this war story. He can't remember who the prime minister of the United Kingdom is. He couldn't remember what state he was in a couple of weeks ago. I mean, these are not gaffes. It is a problem with Joe Biden, and it's causing a lot of Democrats to start to rethink their front runner.
And there's no doubt about we're starting to hear more of those stories as well. We've heard directly from campaign insiders, according to, I believe it was in Politico, that the Biden campaign wants to kind of keep him from giving a whole bunch of speeches because he's so gaffe prone, and you get a couple gaffes in a row, all of a sudden it's a lot of negative press that you're not going to be able to overcome at any time. That you make another gaffe is just going to play into that role, even if it's a reasonable one. Because look, my assumption is if you have me, and this, I'm saying this as someone who talks for 3 hours a day, but if I'm working on no sleep, I'm traveling city to city to city, state after state after state, I'm going to flub something. I'm going to misspeak. It's bound to happen. On top of that, you add the fact that Joe Biden is like, I think, double check this, he's 110 years old. He's like 110 years old. Like, that's going to cause some flubs. And that's why I think some folks are hoping Biden is actually a front runner, because they believe that he's going to be able to easily lose to Donald Trump.
He's struggling to get through these primaries right now. And to be quite honest, look, all 20 of these candidates in this socialist clown car that they have as a field doesn't compare combined to taking on one president, Donald Trump. And if he's struggling now, just imagine what's going to happen next year.
So we'll see. I still maintain Joe Biden's going to be a tougher battle for Trump, but let me know what you think. 1-800-465-8770. Back with one more hour.